So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 31, The Movements of the Living Entities, text number 2. Kalalam Tvekaratrena Pancharatrena Budbudam Dasahena tu karkandu Pisyannam vatataparam. Translation. On the first night, the sperm and ovum mix, and on the fifth night, the mixture ferments into a bubble. On the tenth night, it develops into the form like a plum, and after that, it gradually turns into a lump of flesh or an egg, as the case may be. Purport. The body of the soul develops in four different ways according to its different sources. One kind of body, that of the trees and plants, sprout from the earth. The second kind of body grows from perspiration, as which flies, germs, and bugs. The third kind of body develops from eggs, and the fourth develops from an embryo. This verse indicates that after emulsification of the ovum and sperm, the body gradually develops either into a lump of flesh or into an egg, as the case may be. In the case of birds, it develops into an egg, and in the case of animals and human beings, it develops into a lump of flesh. So we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is also known as the Bhagavat Purana and is one of the 18 principal Puranas, which are part of the main body of Vedic literatures. There are the four principal Vedas, the Yajur Veda, Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, and 108 Upanishads, and the four principal Vedas are dealing with mostly with the glorification of the Supreme Lord and other powerful entities in the universe. The Upanishads deal with the absolute nature of the truth, that the soul is eternal and that the Supreme Lord is eternal. And this eternity is stressed again and again in the Upanishads. In the Puranas, Purana means the old, so it means history. In one sense, the Puranas are describing the history of the universe, not just in chronological sense, and not only what goes on this planet, but as I said, of the universe. So sometimes there are descriptions what goes on other planets, sometimes description what goes on this particular planet, or other times descriptions of what happens on lower planets. Srimad Bhagavatam is scripture which has been revealed by the Supreme Lord. There is a mention about the Bhagavatam that once Lord Sankarsan spoke the knowledge of Bhagavatam to the Kumaras, and it says in that way it is even spoken by the Supreme Lord himself. Anyway, there are many great sages who are speaking in Bhagavatam. They are quoted and they are mentioning various things. So it's quite a scientific book. It gives a lot of information. So at this point, we have just reached the description of how the child is taking birth. And the description is that when a man and woman come together and engage in sexual activity, that the sperm and ovum mix. And it says that that happens on the first night. Then for 5 nights, the mixture ferments and it begins to grow into like what is called a bubble. On the 10th night, it develops a form like a plum. And after that, it gradually turns into a lump of flesh or an egg, as the case may be. So modern science also has some perspective on these matters. But it is very interesting to see that thousands of years ago, there was intricate knowledge about such matters. People knew very well what was going on, not by the help of all kinds of technology, but through other means. Not by machines where we x-ray people, etc., or where we cut them open to find out what's really going on. As we learned in our biology classes in school, I don't know how it was in your school, but in my school they brought in the chicken, and everyone got a chicken one day. Yeah, the whole class, everyone got a chicken. It's like, And then we all got the knives, and everyone had to cut open the chicken and make drawings. It was a different piece of paper to make a drawing of this, of what you were seeing. Yeah, it was really intense. And at one point you had to cut open the stomach. That's where the whole class almost went knockout. It was intense. And you were just pushed into this, right? So everyone was doing it in total horror, because the school was forcing it upon you. But you somehow or other did it, you know, because you're a kid and kind of submissive. Yeah. Now you would, an adult would say, forget it. Take your chicken back home. Still remember that class. So, the Vedic culture is here not only describing how the body comes about, it is also pointing out that the body is already alive. It's not that at one point it's tissue, right? Some tissue which can be aborted and thrown away and it's not alive, and that then after 3 months or so, when it really is a child, that then it's alive. You know, before that, no, not really, you know. It's just tissue, right? But abortions are intense things, right? Oftentimes, we should not think that it's just such a light thing. One doctor who is a devotee, I once had a discussion with him about abortion, and he said he also had some memories of his student days, and he said the most difficult thing that he had to do was witness an abortion. Right, and he said this surgeon, he took these huge scissors, right, and just cut the embryo in the womb in half, just a diagonal cut, right, so like somewhere like, and then pulled out the two halves, right, and it was like the shape of a little child. So he said when he saw that, you know, he was highly shocked. And felt and never to want to have anything to do with this. Anyway, he is a doctor now. So you get these difficult decisions. Save the mother or the child. Yeah. What to do? For most people, abortion is not such a big decision these days. At least for so many people, it's just the way to go. And it's not difficult to go and get your treatment just around the corner, and all over town, everywhere and anywhere, in nice clinics, etc. Nicely organized, no problem. So, if you didn't guess, we are against abortion. Why? Because basically we feel every living being has a right to live. And one cannot just say that a child does not have the right to live. Every living being does have a right to live. And we cannot just kill someone just because, we didn't exactly plan this child. It happened by accident. No, then we have to take responsibility for our actions and bring up the child, whatever may be. Another very important point that has been made in the Bhagavatam is that not only is life a matter of sperm and ovum mixing, Or it is not that life is just a biochemical thing. As nowadays is so often thought, right? Of course, they still don't know how it happened, right? That somehow or other DNA molecules formed themselves, that somehow or other from matter life developed. Because although they say it did at one point in time, they have never confirmed it again. Right? It's not happening now. Just like Prabhupada said, they say that from monkeys came men. But Prabhupada said, where is that monkey that we have ever seen turn into a man? Huh? Has it ever happened that you went to the zoo and came back in the morning and there was a man in the cage instead of a monkey? There has been no such matter recorded as yet. A transformation from monkey into man. Right? So it remains theory and actually no practical confirmation of the fact. So theory is nice, but not good enough. Sorry. We can't accept. Too bad. First proof, please. Or otherwise, do not claim so much authority. So, the point that Bhagavatam makes is that not only is there a question of biochemistry, but rather that on the very moment of the conception, when the sperm and the ovum mix, that a soul enters into the equation, and that the soul, or a subtle entity, at that point in time, becomes attracted in that particular mixture, and from that day on, is placed there. This is the arrangement. It is said then the living being is inclined towards enjoying and controlling the material energy, that then he takes his birth in one of the various species, 8,400,000 varieties of species in this world. Then he takes birth, sometimes as a human being, sometimes as an animal, sometimes as a germ, all that is possible. It is difficult to imagine for the modern man that he could become reduced to the state of a germ. It's hard to believe. But still, the Vedic scriptures are pointing out that the living entity can both uplift himself and degrade himself in terms of his next birth. Right? And that it depends very much on the mentality that he develops. And of course, the germ stage is not a developed birth. At that stage, one's opportunities are very limited. So, as one engages more and more in degraded activity, activity that contributes to the suffering of the world, right, then one will have to pay. One will have to pay. And the more one becomes involved in causing this suffering in the world, to other living beings in various ways, one will have to pay by being denied facilities in the next life. If we misuse our hands, then our next birth will be without hands. If we misuse our feet, our next birth will be without feet. If we misuse our eyes, our next birth will be without eyes. If we misuse our ears, even they will be taken away. What will be left? If we misuse every cell in our body, then in the end, what will be left? We may be reduced to a germ. Right? It is a somewhat limited existence. But a germ can enjoy also, he can try and enjoy the blood cells or eat up some organ or something like that. Right? So it's not that germs have no fun at all. Don't worry. Even if we have to be a germ, right, one can. I had once malaria in India, you know, and it was in a village in India, and we had a temple there. And the doctors were really, really bad, really bad. You know. So we used this book, which was called Where There Is No Doctor, big book, you know, all the diseases in there and all the symptoms in there. And we had a room with a microscope in there.
And then,
so it said if you have malaria, you take some blood, you know, a little blood from the finger, okay, put it on the glass of the microscope and look under the mic, right? And then you got the picture. So here was the page with the picture of the, you know, what you were supposed to see. And there it was. And sure enough, you know, I had the picture, right? And what was the picture? The picture was that one of these malaria germs, right, had broken, had cracked one of my red blood cells, the rascal. Right? He had gone for my red blood cells and cracked them. How did he dare, right? Nuke him. Okay. Take the pills, you know, the nuclear pills, right? I took, you know. Throw the bombs on the malaria rascals. They're eating up my red blood cells. Wait a minute, you know. And meanwhile, I was lying there, you know. Anyway, the bombs worked, and here I am. You know, we won the war. So, what to do? It's somewhat awkward. You know, you do feel involved when it's your own blood under the microscope. You know, it was a somewhat surrealistic experience. Anyway, this is the pleasure of being a germ, right? When you're a germ, you have that opportunity to eat a few blood cells or, you know, sometimes they eat the liver, right? Just eat holes in the liver. Great fun, you know. So in this way, or eat the spine from the inside out, right? Slurp it all up. Anyway, I won't go on into the graphic descriptions anymore. I just want to point out there are so many different types of bodies that the living entities attain, and it is said that all these bodies are meant for the same purpose. In all these bodies, we are trying to enjoy. So don't think it's only the human being who tries to enjoy. You can see it, you know, that like the gazelle, right, who is able to run. There's like this one type of gazelle which is called sometimes called the springbuck, and the springbuck, it can actually jump, you know. So they run and then they go like, and they just go up vertical, and they go up 1 meter in the air, like we've all seen on TV, or maybe in real life. I saw many times in real life in India and Africa. And I mean, when you see the expression on the deer's face when he does it, you know, it's a total kick, right? It goes, pew! It's like far out, you know, totally a big kick, right? Big kick. It's just, I mean, if you think they're not enjoying, come on, you know. I mean, we can't do that. They're more fun than we do, right? Like, you know, I mean, surfing in Hawaii is such a big thing, right? That's okay. But did you ever see a dolphin surf? Right? Boy, I mean, dolphins, they do somersaults and all kinds of things, right? You think they're bored in the water, dolphins? Right? That it's just that the dolphins are just, oh, you know, working hard for their food, and that's all there is in dolphin life? No, dolphin life is full of fun. A dog, you know, a dog just loves to bark. Even when you tell him, shut up, you know. I told you to shut up, okay? Shut up. Shut up, I told you. Shut up. You know, huh? Who has not experienced some dog somewhere in his life, sometimes in the Western world? Oh boy, do I remember this dog of my parents, you know. How many times did I tell the stupid dog, shut up, dog. Shut up. How many times? He barks anyway. He loves to bark. He loves it. He loves the sound of his own bark, you know. He loves it.
Right. He loves, especially loves to howl and growl at the other dog from the other side of the street, who is main enemy. Like that, you know. There are pleasures in life for all, in all species. There is no doubt about it, right? So it's not that we are, that just a human form of life is an opportunity for expressing our pleasure. All different kinds of bodies are opportunities for expressing our pleasure. And at the same time, we're not always getting pleasure either, isn't it? You know, let's be realistic. Life has its pleasures, right? For the little gazelles who are jumping there so nicely in the plains until the cheetah comes, you know. Now those little gazelles can run, you know. Boy, can they run. But those cheetahs run just a little bit faster. Like, when that starts running, you know, in no time, right, it catches up and then with its huge mawl grabs the little gazelle by the neck, right? Flap, flap, flap. Anyway, we've seen these things on TV also many times. and if you haven't, then we have a nice video for you upstairs in our collection, which shows just pictures of that, right? Once we went to the north, to the with a bus tour to Scandinavia, and the tour organizers thought he should show us videos from the North Pole, etc., to get into the mood, you know, going to Sweden and watching all these videos. And there's these little penguins. They take their birth from their eggs. All the eggs come out, and these little penguins come out, and they're standing on the ice, and they go, hey, you know, and the ice slopes down a little bit towards the sea, and all the penguins, you know, they go like, and they start to slide, you know. They get it down. A few times they fall, and then they got it, you know. They're sliding down, right? Like professional sliders, like skiers on the slope of a hill. And they just, right off the edge, into the water. And just then, the killer whale came out of the water and opens its mouth. And all these little penguins, hundreds of them, all in that huge, huge mouth. Wow. Wow. A little shocking. Yeah. As I said, I still remember that picture. Yeah. After years now. Because it was a bit strong. So there is the sweet side and the strong side to the world in all species. You know, it's not only fun to be a penguin. There are certain risks, you know. You're just having a good slide and suddenly this killer whale comes around the corner and you gotta watch out. Well, what's different in our lives, you know, you gotta watch out, you know. Suddenly a monster truck comes around the corner with a ridiculous speed and, you know, if you're not careful, right, you know, you breathed your last. Right. So this is the nature of life in the material world. Sukha dukkha da. Happiness and distress are always changing. So therefore, the wise, they sit down and think. They don't just run around and they think, well, you know, if I just stay on the right side of the street, you know, right? If I just stay on the sunny side of the street, everything will be all right. And if there's rain on both sides, well, I just go through it. I know that the sun will come back soon, you know. And it will be all right. It will be all right. Maybe I'll win the lottery. Who knows, you know. Like, I mean, maybe I get rich. You never know. Maybe I get a movie star as a wife. Maybe I'll become famous, you know. I should become famous. Why not? I'm as talented as everybody else. I certainly have all the ability in me to become famous. I'm as good as those guys, you know. Why am I not recognized? What's wrong with the world? Don't they realize how great I am? And hope, and all these things for name, fame, glory, recognition, position, and, you know, and so many things in life. Right. Fine. That's being caught up in what is called the rat race. Right. But the wise, they sit down and are impartial and say, what is going on in this place? why are we suffering at all? What a strange arrangement. What is going on? So Bhagavatam begins with this particular state of mind, the inquisitive state of mind. Bhagavatam is a continuation from the Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta Sutra is the summarized form of the Vedic conclusions. Veda Anta Sutra. Veda means knowledge, Anta means the end, and Sutra means in condensed form. So a summary of all the Vedic knowledge. Vedanta Sutra, a very famous book also. So the Vedanta Sutra says, Atato Brahma Yigyasa, now that I've attained the human form of life, now let us inquire into the absolute truth. That's what it's for. The human form of life is for this purpose, to wonder like, well, what's going on in this place? Why are things the way they are? What is the purpose of life? What is happening within this universe? What's happening on those stars in the sky? And so many other questions should be there in the inquisitive mind. Modern man has these questions, but he's fooled. He's fooled by school, by science, who tell him, we have all the answers. We've got all the chips. And then after some time he says, yes, we've got all the answers. Yes, we know everything. Yes, yes, we have all the answers. We already know, brought this whole planet in map. We already know everything about everything there is to know, and the universe we are just now uncovering. Just like 500 years ago, man went all over planet Earth and discovered the different continents. Now we are discovering the galaxies. And soon, mankind will expand into other directions of the universe. It didn't happen. You know, there was a TV series, right? Not only the Flintstones, but there also was the Jetsons, right? The Flintstones and the Jetsons. So the Jetsons, just like Fred Flintstone is somewhere in the Stone Ages, the Jetsons were in the future. And like the Jetsons, that they were living about now, right? Because, you know, this is so many years back. So they're, and if you look, it was very futuristic, right? They didn't go up the stairs. There was a tube in the house. You just go in the tube. They're on the next floor. They'd go to work with the flying saucer, you know. There used to be traffic jams at the Milky Way. Yeah? All the flying saucers in line. And all these things, you know, like the computerized signs there. Slow, slow down, you know. Like that, you know. Everything was there. But it was a highly futuristic thing, right? Didn't happen. It didn't happen. You know, we didn't make any advancement for a long time, right? I mean, yes, okay, we did a little bit with electronics. And the biggest advancement that we've made, right, is the telephone. We're still driving around in cars. We still don't have flying saucers, right? We still don't live on the moon. Or on Mars, or anywhere, you know. We're trying to not speak too much about it, you know. In the 60s, right? The space, you know, the conquest of space was the biggest thing. We are about to conquer space. We're conquering the space. We're taking all the planets. Like this, you know. But now, you know, it's like... NASA, you know, NASA was such a big thing. I mean, you know, NASA, everyone was talking about NASA. NASA, 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 you know. I even went to NASA, you know. I went to NASA as a kid. You had to go to NASA. If you hadn't been to NASA, you know, like, God, you weren't even big enough to blow your nose. Don't you... you know, don't you know your NASA, you know? Of course I know my NASA. What do you think, you know? There's one boy in my class, he studied up on it. He knew everything. He used to be allowed sometimes to give these talks, you know, and you speak about space and spaceships and NASA and everything. Boy, totally brainwashed. Anyway, so like this, now I see the picture of that boy. And the funny thing was, he used to go like, and his name was Ronald Haas. And he really did that, I'm telling you. And so he used to speak about space, and then he got like, Ronald Hare, yeah. That was his name. What can I do? Life is funny sometimes. You couldn't write it, you know. You couldn't make it up. So, whatever may be, now, yes, we talk about, sometimes you hear a little bit about the space program, but, you know, it's become quiet, right? Quiet NASA, you know, it's a sleepy affair. It became too expensive for the taxpayers. We couldn't, like, you know, invest so much anymore into NASA. It's going on, but we are forced by the economy to put it on a low flame. And, you know, the United States, we have now more important things to deal with on the planet, and therefore the United States of America at this point in time has decided that they can no longer just invest all the national budget into the space program because the taxpayers are not really satisfied with this development. Right. Yes. Okay, babe. We're not going to go to the moon. We're going to go to Iraq. That's the latest development of the United Space Program. Yes, it sounds pretty spacey to me. Anyhow. So, what are we doing? Let us come to a conclusion. The talk carries on and on and on. It rambles on. So we should be coming to some sense now. So to think that we are just beings from a biochemical origin, right? So a combination of a bunch of chemicals in a plastic bag, right, is quite depressing. And if that's what we are, then, I don't know, you know, then I begin to develop, but then I want to drink. I mean, if that's what I am, God, I tell you, you know, give me a drink, you know, I'm going to drown my sorrows. Yeah. I wouldn't know how else to deal with that. Yeah, that's horrible, quite depressing. And then I am supposed to love another plastic bag. You know, my dear, I like the form. I like your plastic form. I love your plastic face. I love your plastic eyes. Plastic dolly, I love you so. I call the plastic love song. It's a bit intense, if that's all there is. So we have to look at the consequences of our philosophy. If biochemistry is what it's all about, then I think we have to open up more mental hospitals on the planet. Right? If we start to promote to the world that we are all coming from a biochemical origin, I think really we need more therapists and more mental hospitals to deal with all the fallouts from such a theory, because it is causing a lot of mental stress. The idea that we are spirit souls and eternal are much more is more soothing to our nature. Even Nietzsche brings up the point that we have just created a God, right? Because we feel better, right, about the idea. We have just kind of, in our mind, created the concept of a God because we feel better with that. Well, if we feel better with that, why is it that we feel better with that? Right? There was thirst and there was water. There was hunger and there was food. There was sleep and there was a bed. Right? And there was a spiritual vacuum and there was a desire, Nietzsche says, to create some God. Right? So, isn't that in itself an indication? Right? Isn't that so in itself a logical indication? And when we speak about God being eternal, and we're speaking about us being eternal souls, phew, it doesn't feel bad at all to be eternal. Right? I wouldn't mind being eternal. Right? Even the gross materialist wouldn't mind. Simone de Beauvoir wrote her book about this guy who in the Middle Ages invented this elixir. Blah, 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 blah. There he went. And yes, he was eternal. But he wasn't sure. So he decided to test it on a mouse. He took a mouse. He gave the mouse the elixir. He took the mouse. And then he crushed the mouse. And the whole mouse, car, 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 you know, and grounded it up, right, to powder. And then, whoop, that powder once again came together and formed a new mouse. And he suddenly realized that he would have to live forever with a mouse. It's a funny book, you know. It's quite a funny book. Right? It goes on. He's like, he's had many love stories, but he never loved anyone so much that he was ready to give them eternity, right? He's thinking like, well, I don't know if I want to live with her forever. So there were these problems, you know. So everyone would die. And then his sons, you know, they were waiting for dead to die, and dead didn't die. And it really didn't go well. In one case, they tried to poison him. They tried to poison him, and it didn't work. Right? It was a big frustration. Dead wouldn't die, and they wouldn't get any inheritance. So the kids were also upset. So all these things came out in the book. And then at one point, it's become modern times, and he finds there is this old man, or not old, but older man, in a mental hospital or some old age home, and he's sitting there like a living plant in a wheelchair. And that's all he does. He just sits like that. He never speaks. He never does anything. It's him. It's our friend, the eternal one. He's decided that, like, forget it, you know, and I'm not going to bother with it anymore. It's nothing is worth it, you know. So he's maneuvered himself into this whole thing, right? And then there's a story that there's this young nurse who does a whole number on him, right? Who tries to bring him back to life, and she tries everything, embraces and the works, right? And still he doesn't react, and she can't stand it because she's kind of like, you know, the hot potato nurse, you know. And she just can't stand it that she can't drive the mind of any man mad, you know. She has to, right? So that this man is not affected by her advances, you know, is like just too much for him. So one day she drives him out in his wheelchair and drives him off of a ramp of a boat right into the water. There he goes, you know. And then you wonder, you know, everyone wonders, of course, well, what will happen? Will he come back up or will this be it? You know, will he stay down there? He wasn't that detached after all. He swam back up and he was angry. Anyway, that was another affair with the nurse this time. So like that, you know, it goes on. But so even...
Even the existentialists, Simone de Beauvoir, the wife of Sartre, an existentialist who did not believe in anything, not in the soul, not in God, even the existentialists are still having a preference for eternity. Right? So just see. Yes. This class also goes on eternal. It's the eternal class. Never stops. Anyway. My conclusion is therefore that, like Prabhupada yesterday said, it doesn't make much sense. There's just somehow, in the middle of all this, of this whole universe, some chemicals come together and somehow or other mutate into a living being who later on develops the most refined aesthetic sense to write poetry about finer sentiments, etc. Right? It's amazing that these chemicals can write such poetry. It's amazing that these chemicals can have such sense of artistry for the wonderful creation that we are encountering. It is amazing that we can become so deeply emotionally moved. It's amazing that chemicals can have emotions. Emotional chemicals is quite amazing. So considering all that, it makes less and less sense. The more you talk about it, the more you think, it's ridiculous. Of course there is a soul. Have you ever seen someone die? After someone's dead, the body really looks like it comes out of Madame Tussauds. You know? No, really, it looks suddenly like it's been made of wax, like Madame Tussauds. Exactly the same dull shine of it's amazing. I've seen many times, you know, somehow or other. I lived in Vrindavan and many people come there who are terminally ill because they want to leave their bodies in Vrindavan. So I saw that happen quite a few times. Just like Madame Tussauds. Dull. Something is gone. There's no doubt about it. Something's gone. The chemicals are still there. They haven't gone. So, you know, just put a new chemical in. Bring it back to action. Fix it. Just fix it. Why don't you fix it? If it's just a mechanical thing, right? Look, let's say someone dies of a heart attack and he's dead. Why can't they, after he's dead, put in a new heart, right? Connect all the tubes nicely, right? And then with a pump, right? Just pump the blood through again, get it started up, you know, and start the old car back up. Right? Why not? They can fix all the parts, no problem, if it's just a matter of mechanics. But why doesn't it start? Without the soul, there is no life. Okay, I've said it too many times now, so, and I could go on for eternity, so I will stop now, and I'll see if there are any comments or any questions from the and we sell this Rembrandt to the gentleman over there. Every day he asks a question, like it's like in an auction, you know, like twist his mustache. He says, okay. Yes. Sold, yes.
Is it possible that in some religion, like, for example, in Christianity, at one point they were saying that women don't have a soul, and animals, even nowadays, they say...
That's theology. That was not actually the Bible. That was the theology. Yeah, those theologians. So that's philosophizing about the thing. You don't find that actually mentioned in the Bible. Let me see. This philosophy is not always a an objective search for the truth. Rather, there is plenty of philosophy out of convenience. It's great when animals have no soul. Right? Great. Then there's nothing wrong with... Yeah, it's quite convenient. Right? So, when a meat-eater culture comes up with the philosophy that animal has no soul, we understand what has motivated the philosophy, not exactly the tendency for the truth. When a woman has no soul, great too. Shut up. That's a fantastic solution for some fundamental problems in the world. I mean, I can appreciate, you know, that certain philosophers might become attracted to that, right? In case of an unhappy marriage. It could solve your marriage problems. You see.
That they know so much already. How old is the Srimad Bhagavatam?
Well, Srimad Bhagavatam was originally carried forward in a spoken form, yeah, and so it was carried on because all these stories were carried on. Like it is said that Brahma lives 100 years. Now, what is it? Is it 4.3 trillion, his lifetime? Gauranga, you're good at these numbers kind of thing. I'm talking the lifetime.
Yeah, 311 trillion.
That's it, 311 trillion. See, he has a great... Yes. Oh, Jai, thank you. I always forget these things. 311 trillion, 40 billion, right? Okay, that is the lifetime of Brahma, or that's the lifetime of the universe. Yeah. Now about half of that has passed, yeah, according to that. So the stories of the Bhagavatam begin at half of whatever that is, you know. I mean, 311 trillion, 40 billion divided by 2, you can do it. I'm too lazy. The pastimes mentioned in the Bhagavatam start there. So we can understand that verbally it has been carried on since that time, you know, and little by little more and more added on to it. Yeah? Different activities, etc. 5,000 years ago, Vyasadeva wrote it down. Yeah. And he started to write down all the Vedic literatures. Yeah. And... okay, so we know it as a scripture for 5,000 years. Now, that dating is not accepted by anyone. The Christians would rather place the Bhagavatam just a little bit closer to Christ, you know, so that like they can give more preference to the Christian tradition. That would be more convenient. Again, you know. Maybe a little bit of calculation born out of convenience. Could be. Okay. Yes. 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 But anyway, 5,000 years. Any other question? Yeah, take turns. For variety's sake. No, it's like yours and then... Vedanta Sutra. The commentary. Isn't it? Isn't that what Prabhupada told us? Isn't that what the Gaudiya Vaishnavas say? It is the natural commentary of the Vedanta Sutra. Anyway, a word is a word. Commentary. Commentary is a continuation. You know? Isn't a commentary a continuation in a sense? Yeah, it's like a further elaboration, a further explanation of subject matter already that was already explained, and then we begin to explain details and elaborate on it, and in this way you get a lot more information. Of course, the word continuation could also imply that it deals with another subject matter and in one sense a little different. Continuation means it could deal with a subject matter that has not been dealt with in the original one, and commentary seems to indicate that it's an expansion on the subject matter before. So the word commentary is better than continuation, but please don't crucify me for saying continuation. I'm a rascal. Using the wrong words, how dare I? Okay. Thanks. Let's continue then. Yes.
I want to ask about the spiritual intelligence.
Spiritual intelligence.
How it works.
It comes from Krishna, the Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Krishna gives it. He says in Bhagavad Gita, Tisam Satatam Yuktanam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Krishna gives the intelligence. Spiritual intelligence comes from rearranging one's life according to the directions of Krishna. Then it comes. And trying to please Krishna. It's like I was reading yesterday that somewhere that Srimati Radharani said that it's not enough to only desire to become a perfect devotee. That's not enough. One has to also serve in the association of devotees, serve them to their full satisfaction, get their blessings, and then one get the blessings that one may get that intelligence. So it's not enough to just try. First of all, one must come to the point of accepting the teachings of Krishna. And then one must desire very much to follow it. It's difficult, and then you try, and it's not enough. Then one has to live in the association of advanced Vaishnavas and serve them, satisfy them. Then one can get the mercy of Krishna. Mm.
And is it that we should serve everyone and...
According to their level of advancement, it is said that one must offer different respects to different Vaishnavas according to their level of advancement. But it says, but if one cannot make a distinction, then one should just serve them all equally. So if one does not have so much knowledge that he can really figure it out who is who, then one should give all equal respect. But if one knows that certain Vaishnavas are more advanced than others, then one should offer more respect where it is due. Krishna Bhajanamrita Narahari Shakar. You want all the questions all at once, you don't get them. It's his turn.
He says plants come out of earth.
Ah.
And what about seeds?
Yes, he spoke about the seeds. So there's four types of birth in the Vedic literature. It is andaja, udbijaja, svedaja, jarayuja. Andaja is the egg, udbija is the seed, sveda is from perspiration, like the germs, etc., and fermentation, that is. And then you have jarayu is the womb, right, the embryo. So, yes, some living beings, just the soul also can enter into a seed. Yes, that's also possible. So that's not described here exactly how that seed is formed, in how many days, etc. We don't read that here. But that must also happen. But this is interesting though, no? Sperm, ovum, mix, fifth night, this and this happens, 10th night, it's like a plum. Plum. That's a bubble. Yeah, boot, boot. It's like the word. You can you know, boot, boot, boot. Boot, 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 boot. It's a bubble. Boot, 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 boot. Mm-hmm. A karkandu is the plum. Karkandu. Can I have a karkandu, please? Yes. Okay, Janaki. I don't know. Why don't I save it for Friday? We because now my meditation is like so different, you know. It's like it would be a total change of mind. And Friday is Lord Nityananda's appearance day, so it comes natural. Yeah, mañana. Friday. Tomorrow is a festival. What time is the feast? No. There's a fast also. What time?
In the evening.
Well, that's the question. That depends. Some temples they celebrate at 2 o'clock, and some temples they fast till evening. That the management has to decide. So I'm just asking now. Okay, we 12 noon. Yeah, fast is till noon. Very good. Fast is till noon. Feast is at 2 o'clock then. Huh? I hope so. Yeah, I'll stay for it. 1:15. Let me do a little noon thing also. Yeah, I'm just trying to. It's going to be good. Abhishek's at 6. Okay, no particular program. But there's a feast at 1:15, and it's going to be good. Who says that? That's what you're saying. That's anyway, we're just arguing about it. I say it should be 2 o'clock. The real feast should be at 1:15. And the other one is for the guests in the evening. You don't have to perform these austerities until we're almost half dead, you know, from the fast all day. And it's like, because there are different understandings of what should be done on a Vishnu Tattva day. Some people say on a Vishnu Tattva you must fast till after moonrise, and then you can take only Anakalpa Prasad, Ekadasi, type of prasadam, and the next day you can then honor the full feast. And in India, this may be sometimes followed. But Prabhupada clearly says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita purports that we should not try to introduce the standards of India in the Western world. There can be different standards, different places. So it seems to me good enough. Even in India, we don't follow this. But usually the temple is divided. Half follows it and half doesn't follow it. But Prabhupada didn't really start it. For Nityananda's appearance day, there seem... Korpunim, of course, there are definitely conversations with Achyutananda that make it clear that it should be that time. But as far as Nityananda's, we don't see that. But we have debated it for years. Moonrise, noon, next day, feast in the evening, feast at noon, like that. So I just wanted to know what you were going to do. It's your decision. Yeah, good. It's his decision. Yes, you're the last one. And then we're going to stop.
I was thinking all this previous
Paritaranaya Sadhanam, that he comes to protect his devotees. He came to protect the earth. When the demon Hiranyaksha stole all the gold from the earth by mystic power, then the earth fell out of its orbit into the darker regions of the universe. The Lord appeared in the form of a huge boar, lifted up the earth. And it shows so many things about Krishna, unlimited things. It shows how playful the Lord is. It shows how the Lord always upholds the order of the universe, and that the purpose of the universe is dharma, or self-realization, that the purpose of the universe is to come to spiritual life, and so forth. And all these things are there, and many more. Lord Varaha is certainly important. He is one of the principal incarnations of the Lord. Today is, of course, Varaha Dwadasi. I chose to continue speaking on this Bhagavatam today, right? And therefore, I cannot give a whole lecture now on that Vara as well. But maybe you should do something at lunchtime or this evening, right? No, I mean, it would be nice. I mean, if someone would give a lecture this evening on the appearance day of Lord Varaha. But I felt that this verse of Bhagavatam was very relevant this morning, and I wanted to speak on it. Thank you very much.